Tonight's shir is on the third aspect of Musaf, and the title is Shofros, the Powerful Shofar. We're going to address three psukim in Shofros, just like we did with Malchios Achronos. The first pasuk comes from the Torah, the second from the Ksuvim, and the third pasuk we're going to address is from Yeshayahu, from Nevi'im. Okay, so let's take it up. Actually, Shofros, just a little background, Shofros addresses Har Sinai, the shofar of Har Sinai, and the shofar of Geula, and we're going to try to understand those ideas more in depth. And we'll take it up from source number one, which is Shmos Perak Yates Yates, Pasuk Yates, and it's talking about the shofar that was present by Har Sinai. It says, Vayhi kol ha-shofar holeich v'chazek me'od Moshe yidaber v'ha'olokim yanenu v'kol. So the kol shofar, the sound of the shofar, was getting stronger, and Moshe spoke, and Hashem responded with a voice. Okay, so let's look at Rashi. Rashi is number two on the same pasuk. What does it mean? Holech v'chazek meod, and it's a famous Rashi. Minag hedyot kol zman shu marech liskoa kolo machlish v'chohe. By a regular person. When they blow the shofar, the longer you blow, it usually gets weaker. Aval kan holech v'chazek me'od. Okay, so the first idea in the shofar by Har Sinai itself is that it got stronger. It didn't get weaker like a normal person. V'lama kach mitchila. And then he asks the second question, why was it weaker in the beginning and getting stronger? So why did it start off weak? Why not just keep it strong the whole entire time? So he says, L'shaber oznehem mashi yichol l'shmoa, in order that the people's ears could hear what they were capable of hearing. Okay, so we'll explain what that means. But let's just read through Rashi. But that's a strange statement. What does it mean that the reason why it was weaker initially is so that the people would be able to understand or hear what they could hear? Okay, Moshe yidaber, number two. Kishahayo Moshe medaber umashmiya hadibros l'Yisrael. When Moshe would speak and he would give over the dibros, sharei lo shamu mipi agvura el anochi velo yelecha. So the only dibros that were given by God and God's created voice were the first two. Va'kadosh baruch hu misayu lases bo koach lios kolo magbir v'nishma. But Hashem, he helped Moshe by amplifying his voice so that Klal Yisrael could listen and hear the dibros from Moshe. So that's what it means, Moshe yidaber. And what does it mean, Vashem Yanenu V'kol? Yanenu al Dvar HaKol. He responded with regard to the matter of the voice. Kimo Asher Yanev Eish al Dvar HaEish Lehorido. With regard to the fire, to bring it down. I think the last part is pointing out that it wasn't God's voice himself, but he created a voice, and he responded with regard to the voice, al Dvar HaKol. The voice was an entity. Okay, but the first idea in your test is really what I want to focus on, the idea of the shofar. What was the purpose of the shofar of Har Sinai according to Rashi? So he says two ideas. If we go back to the beginning of source number two, he says, Holech v'chazek me'od, on this unique quality. One is that normally a shofar dies down, it gets weaker as you blow it. And over here, the opposite took place, that the shofar got stronger, and this was at Har Sinai. And the second idea is that the reason why it started off weaker was in order that Klal Yisrael be able to hear what they could hear. So I just want to understand what those concepts are and how we could tie them into the purpose and the goal of Shofar by Har Sinai. Does anybody have any thoughts? Like, what was the purpose? How would you define or characterize the purpose of Shofros at Har Sinai based on this Rashi? So I would say that the purpose is to prepare Klal Yisrael for what they're about to encounter. Because the shofar occurred before Klal Yisrael heard the dibros, and right before they're hearing the dibros, they hear this strange type of shofar. And the shofar is starting off weak and getting stronger. But what was the purpose of this, and why prepare them in this manner for what they're about to encounter by Har Sinai? So there's two points that Rashi is making. They're both, I think, deep points about the preparation of Klal Yisrael. One is that Klal Yisrael, they're going into a situation where they would hear God speak. And the idea is that, as we mentioned before, the idea is that God doesn't speak. He doesn't communicate through, or he's not limited to communication through speech, but he created a kol. And it's not really God speaking like a human being speaking. So the first idea that Rashi's saying is that the goal of shofar was to teach Klal Yisrael this lesson, that before they enter into Har Sinai and before they hear the Dibros, they have to recognize that the limitations that man has when it comes to speech don't apply to God, because God is not actually speaking. He creates a kol, and he can manipulate sound as he wants and as he wishes. So the first idea is to prepare them and give them the proper idea of what the Dibros are, that they're not really, it's not like a human being speaking. It's not a human being manipulating sound, but rather it's God, and God creates the kol, and he can manipulate the kol as he wishes. And this is an important idea, a critical idea, for Klal Yisrael before they actually hear the Dibros, that they should have the proper idea about God and not have a false idea about God with regard to this respect. But what's the second part? The second part is V'lama kach metchila. So then the question is, fine, so just have this powerful shofar that's consistently powerful, and you would know that it's not human in its quality because a person gets weaker. So why start it off weak and then it gets stronger? So he says at the end, yeah, go ahead, please.
I think maybe it's going to foreshadow B'nai Yisrael's relationship with Hashem, that they're, as they continue on, their relationship's going to grow. So it was weak, like it's supposed to be symbolic of that.
Okay.
Not Hashem, it's just supposed to be symbolic of that experience that they're about to undertake.
Okay, but he's not, what's Rashi saying though? He says, L'shaber ozneam mashi chon l'shmoa. He says, in order that their ears be able to hear what they could potentially hear. So he doesn't really address it as it's not really a symbolic idea. It seems like there's something else there in Rashi. But I do like your approach.
I think that it's like preparing them for this experience, like this very jarring experience.
Okay, good.
The noise that becomes louder and louder and louder.
Good.
It's very jarring, and it's surprising, and it's...
Okay, good. Excellent.
Preparation for hearing God.
Uh-huh. No, you're right. I agree with you. I think it's your speech therapy expertise that helps you define this Rashi. No, seriously. Because I think I think what you're saying is really what Rashi's saying. Because when you hear something in a normal decibel, at a normal decibel, then you can process it in a certain way. But when you hear something that's extremely loud, it takes longer to process, or you process it differently. But when you graduate in a slow, gradual process from an audible, from an appropriate decibel, then, and you process in that framework, and then you keep moving upwards, louder and louder, so you can adjust in a clearer way. You can adjust, and it's therefore the purpose of starting out weaker is in order for Klal Yisrael to be able to understand and process the information that was given to them through, just like they were able to process the shofar at a certain decibel, at a certain voice level. But as it gets louder and louder, they're able to adjust, and their ability to comprehend adjusts as the call gets louder and louder. So that was the idea of, I think Tamar was saying that. That's the idea of L'shaber ozneam mashi chol nishmo, that we're gonna start out at a level where Klal Yisrael can perceive and process at a normal decibel. But then it gets louder and louder in order to allow Klal Yisrael to adjust, so that ultimately when they're before HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai, or the Shechina at Har Sinai, they're able to process the information appropriately and comprehend it appropriately, as opposed to just going from a state of silence to a state of a loud, booming voice. That would be difficult to process, and you could have a distorted idea as a result. So the purpose of the shofar was twofold, according to Rashi. The first idea in shofar, according to Rashi, was that it was highlighting the difference between man's speech and man's voice and ability to manipulate the voice versus God, that God is not limited like man is, and therefore a person shouldn't get confused. They shouldn't go into Har Sinai and listen to the Dibros and believe that God is somehow limited. And he creates this voice, he's able to manipulate it to whatever sound he wants to, and it's his will to. And the second idea of the shofar is that it prepares Klal Yisrael in order to give them the optimal ability to comprehend and process the Dibros. And it did it in a way where it started off lower, it started off in a weaker decibel, and then it got louder and louder in order that Klal Yisrael be able to adjust, right? It's like a loud talker. You know, if you go from like silence to a loud talker, somebody's talking really loud and just screaming, it takes you, you know, it takes you a while to process what they're saying. And you may have a distorted idea if you don't, you know, if you process it immediately. But if there's a gradual change, then you're able to comprehend and process appropriately. Okay? So that's the rule of the shofar in Har Sinai, according to Rashi. But there's another approach, and it's not that different, but it gives us another perspective of the idea of shofar in Har Sinai. If you look at the Rashbam, in Shmos Perek Yutes Pasuk Yutes, the same pasuk, it says, Moshe Yidaber, Ela Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Moshe spoke to God, Ve'ein Kolo Nishma L'Shum Adam, Ela Laha Kadosh Baruch Hu. So nobody could hear it, except for, meaning Moshe's call, except for God. Aval Kadosh Baruch Hu Ya'anenu L'Moshe B'Kol Gadol. So Hashem responded with a very loud booming voice, B'Shvil Kol HaShofar Sheholech V'Chazek Me'od. Because of the fact that the shofar was running simultaneously and getting stronger and stronger, V'tzarach Shia Kolo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Notzeach Kol HaShofar L'Hashmiya L'Moshe. And Hashem's voice, the kol that he created, had to be louder and had to overtake the kol of the shofar in order that Moshe be able to hear. Okay? So this is a strange concept to me. Question is, why did it have to be that the shofar and God speaking, why did they occur simultaneously? I understand the shofar being the initiator of the dibros, but once it's loud enough, so now the kol is created by Hashem and the dibros are given over. But the Rashbam is saying that simultaneous to Hashem speaking was this kol shofar, and it was getting louder and louder as God was speaking, and God's voice boomed over the voice of the or the kol of the shofar. So why set it up this way? Why do we have this consistent kol shofar, and then, you know, for some reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to scream over it? Just create a kol that's very loud. First have the shofar, and then create a kol that's very loud. Okay? So I think we have to get to the root of the idea of the shofar, according to the Rashbam, and just according to the pshat of the psukim. If we look in number 4 in Perek Yutes, the shofar is introduced earlier in the psukim, and this is also in shofros. So we get a bonus tonight. We get two psukim in mikra. So one was Yutes, and this one's Tes Zayin. In number 4, Vayhi Bayom Hashlishi Biyos Haboker Vayi Kolos Uvrakim Vanan Kaved Al Ar VeKol Shofar Chazak Meod VaYecharad Kol Am Asher BaMachane. So what happened? So on the third day, in the morning, there were very loud noises and thunder and a very thick cloud on the mountain, and the kol shofar was very strong, vayecharad kol ha'am asher b'machaneh, and the people got very scared, and they were trembling. Okay? And this is before our pasuk at Har Sinai. So before that, the kolos were constantly going on, and then as they came to Har Sinai, they had this idea of the holech v'chazek me'od. So the question is, this is not a trick question. What is the concept of the shofar according to the pshat of the psukim? What did it do to Klal Yisrael? What did it do? What was their response to the shofar? It says, Vayecharad kol am asher b'machaneh. Yeah, fear, exactly. So the shofar produced a certain fear in Klal Yisrael. In number 4, at the end of the pasuk, it says, Vayecharad kol am asher b'machaneh. So one of the ideas of the shofar is that the shofar was responsible for creating fear. Why was that important? Why was it important that Klal Yisrael have fear? So before Har Sinai, they should approach God, and they should approach Har Sinai with the appropriate yirah. They shouldn't be in just a state of laxity, but they should be fearful, and they should recognize the might of God, and they should be in awe of God, and recognize their smallness, the idea of Yiras Hashem. So the idea of Yiras Hashem had to be prominent before Har Sinai occurred. Okay, so now with this idea, can we explain why, according to the Rashbam's pshat, why is it that you had this situation where the shofar was blowing consistently in number 3, and God is booming over the shofar? Why was that necessary, or why design it that way? So what do you think? Why would why design Har Sinai in the manner that the shofar should constantly be blowing? Just have it blow initially, and then have the dibros, and God will boom. He'll have a booming voice. Why have the booming voice over the shofar? Okay, but I think it fits into number 4, which is source number 4, which explains that the purpose of shofar was to create a state of yira in Klal Yisrael. And they did respond that way. It says, Vayecharad kol ha'masher b'machaneh. So the concept that the Rashbam, I think, is highlighting is that when they're actually receiving the dibros, and they're in the process of Harsinai, of the revelation of Harsinai, they had to be in a consistent level of Yira. And there had to be a consistent Yira. If not, then perhaps they would perish. Because you can't stand before God, or you can't stand before the Shekhinah at Harsinai and not be in awe of God, and not be constantly aware of His might. So the idea is that as the Dibros are given to Klal Yisrael, as the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and later on after Moshe, but as the Kadosh Baruch Hu is giving the Dibros to Klal Yisrael, it's necessary that the shofar keep blowing. They have to remain in the same state of Yira, in the same state of fear, and they can never be without the shofar when they're in the presence of the Shekhinah by Har Sinai. So Kadosh Baruch Hu has to talk over the shofar. I believe just so that it's audible, so that they can understand the Dibros. But the idea is that the shofar has to constantly be blowing throughout the whole event of Har Sinai, so that Klal Yisrael are constantly in a state of fear, in a state of Yira. And they can't lose that. There can never be a break in the shofar, according to the Rashbam. Okay? So now we have two approaches to the role of the shofar. According to Rashi, the approach is to teach them that God is not like man, and that God can manipulate sounds however He wishes. And the second idea was to gradually, according to Rashi, was to gradually allow them or help them comprehend and process the Dibros appropriately. So we're going to gradually move them up in terms of voice level and audible level and decibel level. And the second idea is the Rashbam, that the Kol Shofar of Har Sinai was to maintain a constant state of Yira of Klal Yisrael while the Dibros were occurring, so that Klal Yisrael would be able to survive and exist. If not, then they would be destroyed and perhaps perish. So they have to consistently hear the shofar. Okay? All right. So we just have... So those are really two main ideas. And I just wanted to just show a couple of smaller, just two smaller ideas. In number five, on the same pasuk, because we're doing the pasuk anyway, so he says, he gives a different shot, the Ibn Ezra. He says, Vahi kol shofar minhag ki kol shofar shebetchila yeh yoser chazak. He says the same thing as Rashi. Then normally, when you first blow, it's louder. V'zeh haya lehefech. So this was the opposite. Ulai asa kein Hashem shelo haya chazak betchila shelo yatza liba mehapachad. Okay, so the reason why God did this in the beginning, He made it weaker, was so that their lave would not escape them out of fear. So he's saying a little bit different, but he's also recognizing, the Ibn Ezra is recognizing that the purpose of the shofar was to create a fear. But there's an appropriate level of fear and there's an inappropriate level of fear. When a person's in so much awe that they can't, you know, that they can't survive, that they're so, you know, they're so fearful that they can't even, it sounds like he's saying that a person could faint, or a person could lose their life when you're so anxious and you're in so much awe. So it was dangerous for them. So there had to be some type of regulation of the fear. So the idea of the Kol Shofar, like the Rashbam and like the Pshat of the Psukim in number four, is that the Kol Shofar was meant to maintain a certain level of fear, but it had to be done properly so that Klal Yisrael would be able to maintain it and be able to, you know, to persist in that state of fear appropriately. Okay? And interestingly, just in the last concept on the Psukim, in number six, the Ibn Ezra asks, he has a different shot about Moshe Yidaber. In number six, he says, Taimo, Afalpi, the reason is Afalpi Shaya Kola Shofar Chazak, Vichol Shomo Yecharad, even though it was very strong, and anybody who heard the shofar would be fearful, which we said was the purpose of the shofar. V'chein charad ahar kasher techrad aharetz be'es arash. It was shaking the mountain. Haya ba'osa shah Moshe yidaber v'hashem onehu v'kol. Okay, so when Moshe would speak, at that moment, Hashem would respond with a voice. Shehaya hu levado shomo. Only Moshe would hear it. Lo yimna'anu hashofar l'shomo. So the shofar would not prevent Moshe from hearing the voice. Okay, so according to the Ibn Ezra, Peir Shekatzar, he's saying that Moshe, he wasn't affected by the shofar. The shofar was blowing, but Moshe wasn't affected. But why would that be? Why would Moshe be unaffected by the shofar? So I think everything that we've said fits into that concept. That, you see, the whole purpose of the shofar was to give Klal Yisrael, they needed an external source to create a state of Yira. And they weren't on the level. It's very hard to be on a level to, you know, they weren't on the level to really be at this, in front of God, in front of the Shekhinah. And they needed an external assistance from the shofar to consistently keep them in a state of fear. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't need that, because he was on a very high level, as is. You know, he was panim el panim. He was constantly able to communicate with God. So the idea by Moshe is that the shofar didn't affect him. That even though the shofar is very loud, Moshe almost didn't hear it. He could block out the shofar. Why? Because he didn't need it. He didn't need the shofar to create the state of Yiras Hashem. He was in the state of Yiras Hashem. So the shofar was useless with regard to Moshe. It was useful for Klal Yisrael, but useless for Moshe. Okay? All right. So that's really the first pasuk for tonight. And I'll just summarize the ideas. But we're going to keep these ideas on the back burner, because when we come to the end of the last pasuk in the shir, I think there's a tie-in to the first two pasukim that we took up. So we're going to keep this concept in the back of our minds. But once again, just I think it's important to just summarize and clarify the different roles of the shofar. And when we do shofros, when we read shofros, you should understand the pasukim, and you should understand what the mefarshim say about the pasukim. And the two main ideas, really, is the Rashi's idea to prepare Klal Yisrael in terms of knowledge and in terms of not viewing God in a false manner. And according to the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra, they take the approach that it was really for fear. It was to create a sense of fear, a proper state for Klal Yisrael to be in. And the Rashbam says it has to be consistent. They could never lose it. If the Kol Shofar stopped for a second, they could be liable for death, because it's inappropriate to stand before God when you're not in a state of fear. And according to the Ibn Ezra, the idea is that the fear had to be regulated. It could not be full force, because then they wouldn't be able to survive or exist. And Moshe was unaffected by the shofar. He didn't need an external source to create Yiras Hashem and to be in that state, because he was constantly in that state. So that's a uniqueness that Moshe possessed. Okay, anybody have any questions or any thoughts or ideas? Is it clear? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that as a yes. Okay. So we'll keep these ideas for the last pasuk, because there's a beautiful tie-in. If we move on to Tehillim, the next set of pasukim that we're going to take up is Tehillim Perek Pei Aleph, Pasuk Dalet and Hey. It says, Tiku b'chode shofar b'kesa liyom chaginu. So it says to blow the shofar at the new moon, which is a reference to Rosh Hashanah, b'kesa liyom chaginu, on the appointed time of our festival, ki chok liYisrael hu mishpat l'elokei Yaakov. For this is a statute for Yisrael. It's the judgment of the God of Yaakov. Okay? Now, what does this mean? What is this talking about? Let's look at the pshat. If you look at number 8, Rashi, Bachodesh, it says, Tiku Bachodesh Shofar, Bachodesh Bechidesh Halavana. So it means when the moon is anew. And that's a reference to Rosh Hashanah. And it says, Bakesa Yom Moed Kavua Lechach. It means in the appropriate Moed, V'chein Liyoma Kesa Yavo Beso Lemoed HaKavua, to the appropriate Moed, which is Rosh Hashanah. So it's telling us to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Why? Ki chok hu li Yisrael, number 9, Rashi. Ki chok hu li Yisrael, me'eis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, liskoa ba'osu ha-yom, v'hu yom ha-mishpat la-Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a chok, it's a statute for Yisrael, and a law from God for us to blow on the day of Mishpat of Hashem. Okay? So it's an interesting pasuk. There seems to be a tie-in between shofar and the idea of mishpat, and that it's a yom mishpat, it's a yom din. And we're going to try to explain what that tie-in is a little bit. But let's do the Gemara. If we want to understand the psukim, sometimes you have to get more facts, more information. And there's a nice little Gemara on, not really the first pasuk, but the second pasuk. So we'll go, look at number 10. It's Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Ches Amud Aleph. So Mimai de Tishrehu. I think the question is, how do we know that the Mishpat and Yom the Din occurs in Tishrei? Dechsev, it says, Tiku b'chode shofar b'kesa liyom chagenu. So it says to blow the shofar in the new moon, b'kesa liyom chagenu, in the appropriate festival, appointed festival. Ezu chag shachodesh meskasebo. So what is that chag? Havyom mer zeh Rosh Hashanah. This is Rosh Hashanah. Uchsiv, and it also says, Ki chok li Yisrael hu mishpat l'elokei Yaakov. It says it's a chok for Yisrael, and Mishpat for the God of Yaakov. Okay? So the Gemara takes this up. Tanur Rabbanan. A rabbi's taught. Ki chok li Yisrael hu mishpat le'eloke Yaakov. That this is a statue for Yisrael, and it's the judgment that for the God of Yaakov. Melamed she'ein beistin shel mala nichnasin ledin ela imkein kidshu beistin shel mata esachodesh. This teaches us that the beistin shel mala, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he does not enter into din ela imkein unless the beistin shel mata, meaning man, is mekadesh lechodesh, unless we do kiddush achodesh. Okay? Tani idach, is another brisa, ki chok li Yisrael hu, ein li ela li Yisrael. That only teaches us din for Yisrael, that it occurs on Rosh Hashanah. Le'umos ha'olam minayan, where do we know that the other nations are judged? Tamalomar mishpat le'elokei Yaakov. So that's where we say, mishpat, the judgment of the God of Yaakov. Im kein ma tamalomar ki chok li Yisrael. So then what does it teach you, ki chok li Yisrael? So it teaches us that when it comes to judgment, Yisrael gets to go in first before God. Like Rav Chista says, Melch v'tzibor, if you have a king and his nation being judged, Melch nichnas tchil ledin. First the Melch goes in for judgment. Shnemar mishpat avdo or mishpat amo says that by Shlomo, that first Shlomo gets judged and then the nation. Now, what's the reason? My time, or why is this? Why is it that when you have two entities being judged, a king and a people, that the king goes first? So, Ibai Seima, some want to say, Lav Orach Ara, Lamekam Malka Ivroi. It's not appropriate to have the king stand outside and wait his turn. The Ibai Seima, and some want to say, Mekame de Lefesh Charonof, that the king gets to go in first before the anger gets really hard and harsh. So the king gets to go in to avoid the harshness of the anger. Okay, so it's a very strange Gemara. What are some of the questions on the Gemara? Anybody have any questions on this Gemara? On the phone lines?
Yeah, you're assuming that there's going to be like anger.
Okay.
The judgment would be good. I don't know.
Okay, good question. They're assuming that there's going to be anger. Also, what does this mean that there's an order? I mean, is there really first and second before God? We're talking about the judgment of God, the din of God, and there's no real... I don't understand the concept that there's a first and a second when it comes to judgment before God, that somebody goes in first and somebody comes in second. There is no order. God judges however he judges, but I don't think that it doesn't make sense to me that there's an order. So what is the order trying to convey? That's what the Medrash is trying to address. But the other idea is that... What's the first concept? The first concept that we should focus on is the idea that God doesn't start judging until Beis Din is Mekadesh L'Chodesh. So why is that? What's the concept there? Why should it be that way? Maybe you would say that God judges when he wants to judge. So what does it mean that God only judges when Beis Din is Mekadesh L'Chodesh? So I think there's a simple idea to explain this part of the Gemara. I think the idea is that man initiates din, and it's not completely in the hands of God. Obviously, conceptually, God can do whatever he wills, but the system was set up that man should initiate it. So why is it important that man initiates the din? Because I think the idea is that man has the opportunity to prepare for din. And a common complaint is that I wasn't ready for it. You know, when you get judged or, you know, when you get pulled over for a speeding ticket, for example. So you feel like you weren't ready and it's unfair. You weren't able to prepare appropriately. But over here, by Din, so Klal Yisrael, the way that Din set up on Rosh Hashanah is that man is given, it's a chesed of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that man is given an opportunity to prepare. And we actually create it. We actually initiate Din. The idea being that we know exactly when it's going to occur, and we know exactly the time, and it's in our control somewhat. It's not all in God's control, so that we shouldn't have any misconceptions or any tainos that we're not prepared or that it's not we weren't ready for it. So the idea that man has to be mekadesh l'chodesh before judgment takes place is the idea that we're given the opportunity to play a part in judgment, in order that we prepare ourselves, and we're not taken off guard. I think that's the idea. Okay? And I think shofar would fit into that concept, because shofar is really also an idea in preparing for... If you fit shofar into the idea of tshuva, which is the most common idea of shofar, that it awakens, like the Rambam says, but it awakens people to do tshuva. So I would say that it's part of the concept of preparing man for din. So you have two concepts in the pasuk according to the Gemara. One is that we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and the other is that man initiates din. And I think both are teaching us that man is able to prepare appropriately for the judgment of Hashem. He's able to prepare because he knows exactly when it's going to take place, and he's involved in creating it or initiating it. And the other is that we blow the shofar. The shofar is the opportunity for us to use it, to utilize it, to prepare, and to be in a state where we can, you know, where we can be done and we can be judged. Okay? So I think that's just the first idea in the Gemara. But this other idea, this strange concept that there's an order to judgment, that Klal Yisrael are judged first and then the Umos HaOlam are judged second, is something that we have to explore a little bit. So why, the first answer that the Gemara says is that why is the king judged first? Because it's inappropriate for the king to stand outside while the other people are being judged. So why is it inappropriate for the king to stand outside? What's so inappropriate about it? So it seems like that it's like a lack of it's a lack of respect for the judgment of the king. You're basically saying to the king that you're not as important as the. It makes the king feel like he's not as important as the person who's being judged. The king is almost secondary to the to the people being judged. So the idea, the first idea of order of Seder of judgment, is saying that the judgment of Klal Yisrael is primary, and it's inappropriate to make it that the judgment of Klal Yisrael is secondary to the judgment of the Umos HaOlam, because the judgment of Klal Yisrael is more essential to the existence of the world. It's more important, and the existence of the world is more tied to Klal Yisrael's din as opposed to the other nations. So that's the first idea, that the king shouldn't stand outside. It means that the king is primary, and he should recognize that. Klal Yisrael should recognize that idea, that our judgment is primary, and that the judgment of the rest of the world, the other nations, is really secondary to our judgment. So I think that's the first idea, and the first concept in the king standing outside. What's the second concept? Mikami delefush charonof. So why should it be like that? That the king goes in first, in order that he avoids the charonof, the anger of God. Why is that the case? So the idea is that it's the same concept, that it's not that there's an order here, but it's expressing the fact that Klal Yisrael, their judgment isn't viewed in any other context. It's not viewed in the context of the other nations. But the other nations are viewed almost after Klal Yisrael is viewed. They're viewed within the context of Klal Yisrael. So the idea that Klal Yisrael is judged first, that they're done first, means that they're done prior to, not in the presence of the other nations. The other nations, their judgment doesn't play a role in the judgment of Klal Yisrael, but the other is not the case, that the other nations are judged from within the framework of the judgment of Klal Yisrael, and they are affected by the judgment of Klal Yisrael. So that's the idea that they go in first, because the idea that Klal Yisrael they're not viewed from the perspective of the other nations. They're viewed alone. But the other nations are viewed after the fact. They're viewed from the perspective of Klal Yisrael. Okay? All right, I hope that was clear. That idea was clear. So we have one more idea. If anybody has any questions, feel free to ask. We have one more idea, which is number 12. It's Yeshayahu. And this is another concept that I want to focus on, and I think we can tie it in to the first concept of shofar. So it says in number 12, Vayya bayomahu yitaka b'shofar gadol uvo ovdim be'eretz ashur v'anidachim be'eretz mitzrayim yishtachavu lad Hashem b'har ha-kodesh b'yushalayim. That on that day, the shofar, a great shofar, will blow, uvo ovdim, and all those lost in Assyria will come, and all those exiled in Mitzrayim, and they'll come and they'll bow down to Hashem in Yerushalayim at the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so what is the idea of the shofar here? If you look in let's look at the Radak. The Radak says that Vayyaba Yomahu kafal ora inin l'chazek. Fine, that's one idea, that it's a double pasuk, because the pasuk before also starts like that. It's in order to strengthen the point. Yitaka b'shofar gadol. Kach yiskabtsu ki'ilu hayu niska b'shofar gadol. So all of the world, all of the Jews all the Jews will gather together as if there's a loud shofar. Lashmia hakol b'chol ha'olam. So that the sound of the shofar will be heard throughout the whole world. Kimosha Amar, like it says, Gam Kain v'Hashem Elokim b'shofar yitaka. Kach yavo mikol peya. Everybody will come from all corners of the world, ki'ilu taku lahem b'shofar, as if a loud shofar was blown and all of Klal Yisrael could hear it. Shiavoa ovdim heima shvatim sheheglu me'ever hanar. So the shvatim that were exiled from the Ever hanar, sheheglam sham melech Ashur, that they were exiled by Assyria, v'hu be'aretz Ashur shayu sham ki'ilu avudim. It's as if they're lost and destroyed. Shlo yatsu od misham, they never left. Ki galus bavel shahayu Yehuda v'nyamin shavu achar kein l'shof shivim shana. Because by galus bavel they came back, but the others who were exiled never came back. V'achar kein galu pam shniya v'hem nidachim b'chol peya u'mufuzarim. They're all spread out and scattered. U'mash amar b'arat b'tzarim ki sham yavou kimo shepirashnu u'misham yalu v'shtachavu l'Hashem b'har kodesh u'v'yushalayim. Perish b'har kodesh hu b'yushalayim. Okay, fine. So what's the Radak saying? The Radak saying that the purpose of the shofar in this pasuk, in number 12, is that the shofar is involved, it's a metaphor for the idea that it's as if a shofar will be blown, and that everybody will gather together, and they'll bow down to God in Yerushalayim in the time of the Geula, in the time of our redemption in the future. Okay, so that is the role of the shofar. It's a gatherer. It gathers all the people together. Okay? So this is what I think is a beautiful idea. If you look at number 14, and I got this from the Otzar HaTfilos, and he quotes this Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar, and it's a medrash. It says, Kronav shel ayil. So the ayil that Avram Avinu used to instead of Yitzchak, shel smol shetakabo b'har Sinai. The left one was used to blow at Har Sinai. Shenemar vayhi b'mshuch b'keren ha'yovel. The shel yamin, and the right one, shehu gedola mishel smol, which is greater than the left one, shehu asid liskoa ba l'asid lavo. That'll be used in the future in the geula asida. Shenemar, as it says, v'haya ba yomahu yitaka b'shofar gadol, v'haya Hashem ha'melech kol aretz. So it says, on that day, the shofar will blow loudly, and v'haya Hashem ha'melech kol aretz, and Hashem will be king over the whole world. So this medrash is saying that the ayil, the ram that was used by Akedas Yitzchak, it had two horns to it. One horn was used as the shofar of Har Sinai, and the other horn was used as the shofar of Geula Asida. And which one was used by Har Sinai, the left one, and which one was used by Geula Asida, the right one? Okay, what do you think, what's the difference between the left and the right, in halacha or in general? How would you characterize the difference between left and right? This is for the phone, the people on the phone line. Hello? What's the difference between left and right? The left hand versus the right hand. Typically. So typically, the right hand is more...
It wants to be weaker.
Yes, usually the left hand is weaker and the right hand is more dominant. So it seems like, just to explain the Medrash, the left one, which was less dominant, was used at Har Sinai, and the right one was used and will be used in Geula Asida, which is more dominant. But what is the idea? What's the difference between the left and the right? And why are we using the horns of the ayil, the ram of Yitzchak, instead of Yitzchak? Why are we using that? Or why is God using that to blow and to gather everybody together? So we go back to Akedas Yitzchak. It says in number 15, Vayisa Avraham Eseinav, Vayar, Vihine Ayil Achar Nechaz Basvach Bekarnav, Vayilach Avraham, Vayikach es ha'ayil, vayaleu le'ola tachas b'no. So when we go back to Akedas Yitzchak, once Avram was told not to slaughter Yitzchak, he looked up and he saw that there was a ram and its horns were caught, and he took it and he slaughtered it and he brought it as an ola instead of his son, instead of Yitzchak. And Rashi over there says something very puzzling. He says, tachas b'no. Why does it say that Avram brought the ola instead of his son? Ma'achar shekasu vayaleu le'ola. Once it's said that Avram used the ram as an ola, lo chaser ha-mikra klom, it's not missing anything. Mahu tachas b'no, what does it mean that he gave it as an ola instead of his son? Al kol avoda she'asa mimenu haya mispalel v'omer yihi raton she'tei zu ki'ilu hi asuya bivni. On every single part of the avoda, he davened and said that this should be that each part should be as if he sacrificed his son. Ki'ilu b'ni shachad, as if my son was slaughtered. Ki'ilu damo zarak, as if I threw his blood. Ki'ilu hu mufshad, as if he was flayed. Ki'ilu hu nikdar v'naseh dashem, as if he was burnt and he was made into ash. Okay, it's a strange Rashi, because once Avram was told not to slaughter Yitzchak, why would he try to bring this Ola instead of Yitzchak if he was told not to slaughter Yitzchak? Why is he saying that it should be as if my son was slaughtered? What is that concept? He should just have brought an Ola because he was happy, or because he was trying to be, you know, he's trying to serve God. So what is Tachas Beno, and how does it make sense that once Hashem told him, the Malach told him, don't slaughter Yitzchak, why would he try to bring this Ola and say that it should be as if my son was slaughtered, as if my son's blood was spilt? He was told not to slaughter his son. The whole order was changed. So what's the concept here? What is it Rashi trying to convey? So he's trying to convey a deep lesson or a deep idea in the idea of avoda. So what was the greatness of Avraham's ability to go ahead and kill his son Yitzchak? What did it reflect about Avraham? It reflected two qualities of Avraham. One is Yiras Hashem, and it wasn't a Yira of Onesh, but it was a real Yiras Hashem, because nobody would choose to slaughter their son because of fear of punishment. It would have to be because of an awe, a genuine awe of God. And the idea that he was able to slaughter his son reflected the fact that Avraham was capable of viewing God in that way. But the other is an idea in Ava. I think the Rama mentions this, but you don't. The greatest love for Avraham was his son, was Yitzchak. He was the one who was going to take over for him. And he was basically putting his love, his Avas Hashem, before Ava of his child, which is the highest level of Ava. So both ideas were present when Avraham was able or was willing to sacrifice his son. The highest level of Yira, the highest level of relating to God in the proper state of awe, and the highest level of Ava, the fact that he was able to sacrifice and capable of slaughtering the son that he loved the most, and because he loved God more, is the highest expression of Avas Hashem. So both were expressed, Yiras Hashem and Avas Hashem, in Akedas Yitzchak. And the idea of slaughtering the Ayil instead of Yitzchak is that he was trying to recreate that state. And he recognized that he was at a very high state at the moment that he was about to kill Yitzchak. And he wasn't able to fulfill that state, or he wasn't able to completely actualize that state. But he recognized that that state and that ability of his was a very lofty state. And now when he's bringing the Ola, he's trying to bring it within the same framework. He's trying to achieve the same state of Yira and the same state of Ava through the Ola. So the idea is that the service, the Avoda of Avraham, would come from a perfected, you know, Yira and a perfected Ava. And that's what he's trying to do. It's not that he recognizes that God didn't want him to slaughter Yitzchak, but he's trying to serve God from a state of Yira and Ava. So now, how does that fit into the idea of the shofar of Har Sinai and the shofar of Geula Asida? See, the shofar of Har Sinai, we saw before, the common theme is the idea of Yira, as Yiras Hashem. And it seems like the shofar of Har Sinai was trying to instill a certain Yira within man and within Klal Yisrael in order that they be able to survive and exist before God. But the idea of, I think the idea of the Medrash is that the gathering of Klal Yisrael in the future in Geula Asida will be more dominant. It'll come from a more dominant position. And what's more dominant? Avas Hashem. Avas Hashem is a higher level of relating to God than Yiras Hashem. And the idea is that in Geula Asida, the source of gathering and the process of gathering will be one that stems from Avas Hashem. And it won't be one that comes from a Yira. It'll be more dominantly coming from an Avas Hashem. So that's the idea of the Medrash. The idea of the Medrash is that it's saying that the very concepts that were present in Avraham's sacrifice of the Ayil, the idea of Yira and the idea of Ava, they were both present and utilized in Har Sinai and also in Geula Asida. The idea of Yira, that Klal Yisrael were in a proper state of awe, and almost probably the highest state of awe, was brought about through the shofar of Har Sinai. And the shofar of Geula Asida will bring about, or will gather people together from a different perspective, from their perspective of Avas Hashem. And it'll elicit that response. It'll elicit the response of Avas Hashem. So that's, I think, the idea of the last pasuk in Yeshayahu, Vayah Bayamahu Yitako B'Shofar Gadol. Okay? All right. Any questions? Okay, so let me just review the thoughts on shofros, the ideas on shofros. I know it's a lot of ideas, but I'll try to simplify it. So the first is the idea of shofar of Har Sinai. And the concept of shofar of Har Sinai is the idea that either it was to prepare them so that they're able to process and approach God properly from a conceptual and an intellectual standpoint, or it was an idea in Yira, that they should be in a consistent state of Yira before God. And the shofar really created that Yira because it was very loud and it reflected the might of God. The second idea is the idea of shofar in terms of din, that shofar is really part of the idea of preparing us for din. And we're not bystanders when it comes to din, but we're instrumental in creating and initiating din in order to reflect the fact that we're able to prepare and we're able to be on our game before din occurs. And then the last idea is the idea of shofar of Geula Asida, that the shofar of Geula Asida is not like the shofar of Har Sinai. It's not going to emphasize the idea of Yira, but it's going to bring people together and elicit the idea of Avas Hashem. And we see those two ideas in the Isle of Avraham instead of Yitzchak by Akedas Yitzchak, that the Isle of Avraham by Akedas Yitzchak really reflected the highest level of Ava and Yira, and both those and the role of the shofar in Har Sinai was Yira primarily, and the role of the shofar in Geula Asida, it seems like based on these psukim, is that it'll elicit Avas Hashem, it'll elicit a genuine love of God and the desire to want to know more about God. Okay? Does anybody have any questions, any thoughts, comments? All right, so that was tonight's shiur. I want to give a shiur on Monday.